The destination of this coach is Hazard, Kentucky. We're due there at 5:15. For your convenience, there's a restroom located in the rear of the coach.
You gonna get sick? Huh? Oh my God, he's coming at you!
Alright, when it comes to 2-year-old Olivia James, you are not the father.
You've irritated the tool gods. You must now be smeared with the holy grease of disdain.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. It's JG's Radio Free Insanity with your host, James Gutman. Yo, Gutman, what's the ish?
What's up, guys? That's right, you just heard it. My name is James Gutman. You are tuned in to JG's Radio Free Insanity right here on WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. Good morning or afternoon, depending on when you're hearing this. Today it is Friday. It is December the 16th. It's 2005. And we got a lot going on today. We're going to have Dr. Tom Pritchard, WorldWrestlingInsanity.com columnist who has been without computer access for a little while. So he's going to join us on the phone line. We'll talk to him a little bit about some things that are going on in the wrestling industry. Specifically, I want to ask him a little bit about Dave Bautista, the savior, of course, of SmackDown, a guy that Tom trained. So we'll see what he has to say about some of the comments that Dave has made as far as carrying the SmackDown brand and being the Lord and Savior of all things blue and silver, I suppose. So we'll ask Tom a little bit about that. A lot of things going on in the wrestling industry. We had a pay-per-view this week, TNA Turning Point. Let's talk a little bit about that right off the bat. I saw the show and I liked it. It's actually one of the few shows that I recommended to somebody else, a friend of mine who just complains constantly about the lack of quality of WWE. And I said, you should check out TNA. And it's kind of the thing where, I would have said it before. I would have said it years ago when they were doing their weekly things on Wednesday. But, this time I genuinely meant it. I enjoyed Sunday's show, TNA Turning Point. I thought it was a good broadcast. I think that TNA right now has all the ingredients. And I've said this, and this is what kind of sucks, because I've said this so many times in the last few years. TNA has the ingredients right now to be a viable, not only contender, but real challenger to WWE. It has the performers, it has the youth, it has the talent. In some ways, and at times, it also has a way of promoting. I think the way that they've gotten over Rhino, for those of you guys who don't watch TNA, Rhino came in, and my biggest complaint with TNA was and still is the fact that they bring these former WWE guys in and keep them in the same persona that they had when they were in WWE. I always felt that with WCW, it was cool that they turned Hogan heel, they turned Hall and Nash into more shoot characters and cartoon characters. I thought those were some of the things that get fans who tune in to see an old star to stay. They want to see that old star play a new role. They didn't really do that with Rhino. They haven't done that with a lot of the guys they have. However, what they did do was bring Rhino out and put him in a series of video packages, vignettes, where he talks about being almost reborn in TNA, about after 4 years of being pushed down by the other company up north, this is his chance to break out, blah, blah, blah. And I thought that was actually pretty good. Now, granted, Christian, they do it too, and they do it with Rhino. A lot of talk about up north, and when you were up north, that didn't fly when you were up north, because you're in, TNA now. And I've never been a big fan of that. I kind of think that if you're going to bring in every former WWE guy on the premise that, back up north, stop mentioning up north. If a TNA guy came to WWE, all of his storylines wouldn't involve, I don't know where you came from in the south, I think that TNA does need to shy away from that. However, with the video packages with Rhino, TNA show that even when they don't reinvent somebody, they could still do enough to make people interested in them. And I was surprised that they did it with Rhino. Rhino had been beaten down by the WWE machine. Him and Tajiri, they had a feud with La Resistance, and then that was it. Not really too much going on with Rhino. Rhino would pop up every once in a while, maybe beat Coachman. For those of you guys who remember, he was part of that infamous match where he fought Tajiri at Nassau Coliseum, and Vince McMahon came out in the middle, told everybody the match was boring, and brought out a bikini contest. So yeah, Rhino got his ass kicked, both figuratively and literally, in World Wrestling Entertainment, and TNA did a good job of boosting that up. Here's my ish with TNA. TNA put on a great show. Samoa Joe and AJ Styles was a great match. As you guys, I'm a big fan of AJ Styles. I think AJ Styles has the ability in the ring to make up for a lot of his shortcomings as far as height and things like that. He can also tell a story within a match without using the same spots every week, without using the same kind of cliched ways of getting the fans up and down. He's able to really flow a match, go from move to move, put his spots together so that they seem almost seamless, and he does it really well. Samoa Joe is just a different style of worker altogether, the kind of worker that I think a lot of people haven't seen. Samoa Joe really has the ability to put on a believable match, but he doesn't have to throw himself off a building for it. He goes in there brutal, brutal, brutal. It's like watching someone with Goldberg's gimmick, only with the ability to really get the fans up and down. I think Goldberg was more or less, you know, go out there and kill people. Samoa Joe beats his opponents up and does it in such a way that you feel every punch and you feel every kick, and you genuinely feel like what he's doing is for real. So they had a great match, and I was really into that. Here was the problem with TNA's show. It ended like this, for those of you guys who didn't see it. Jarrett beat Rhino. That wasn't the problem. I know a lot of people think that is the problem. Jarrett beat Rhino, whatever, we move on from Jarrett. As I've always said, the world champion, although it would be better if it was somebody else, it's almost inconsequential. If you have a good program, if you have a good episode, if you have a good promotion going on, you don't have to worry too much about who your world champion is, because you have enough to cover up for it. It's about what you're focusing on. So what TNA did was, throughout the show, they said, we're going to bring in the new face of TNA for 2006, the new face. This was a way for Jeff Jarrett to be in every segment on the show. I mean, he came out for every interview segment. What do you know about the new face? You know, everybody's like, what are you talking about? You know, throughout the whole show, he kept doing this. No big deal. Jarrett fights Rhino. The end of the match, the lights go out. When they come back on, Sting's baseball bat, boots, and jacket are in the ring, coat, or whatever you call it, are in the ring. And everyone, oh my God, that's Sting stuff! And then it went off the air. They actually closed the pay-per-view out, not with Sting, okay? Because a lot of people are bitching and moaning, saying Sting should not be the face of TNA in 2006, and you know what, I agree with you. I think that there are worse choices. It's not Rick Steiner, it's not Lex Luger. I mean, there was a time when TNA hyped up a big surprise for a week and brought out Rick Steiner and Jim Duggan, and that was, wow, you want to jump off, you know, a building at that point. But no, so it was Sting. Sting may be a little bit past his prime. Sting may not be 2006. He may be more 1996, but whatever. I mean, it's cool. I mean, I guess you can live with that. Here's the thing, though. They didn't close the show with Sting. They closed the show with Sting's shit. It made no sense to me. It didn't. To me, if you're going to build a whole pay-per-view around one person, you want to end it on that person. Especially if that person isn't a huge deal. If it was Brock Lesnar, if it was Bill Goldberg, if it was Steve Austin, if it was The Rock, those things would have made sense. You could have had the lights go out and come back on, and there's a, you know, baby Brahma Bull in the ring, or a big eyebrow. I don't know what the hell they could put out there, but something like that. To have Sting's jacket, bat, and boots was just, I mean, it was a sad sign, because in essence, what you were saying was, this is the most important part of the show, so pay attention to it. Meanwhile, you had a show that really, they put together very nicely, and they had a lot of good things going on with it. The AMW 3D match. There were so many better moments in the show, that to close it on that note was just such a low point. And, I mean, I can't even also understand how they could look at that on paper and think it's a good way to close the show. When the lights come back on, what'll happen is Sting's laundry will be in the ring. Like, who gives a shit, right? So that's how they closed it out. I think the TNA, I said it before, they tend to really just focus on such weird stuff at times. Every time the program seems to be coming together well in one area, they shift all their focus to Kevin Nash or Diamond Dallas Page or, there's another part of the pay-per-view that I really wasn't a big fan of. And keep in mind, I like the pay-per-view a lot, but another point that really gets to me as far as what TNA thinks people view WWE as and what they think are big deals, Raven has this little ish going on with Larry Zbyszko. Zbyszko's trying to get him to sign paperwork and blah, blah, and told him he was going to bring out someone to beat him up, someone from his past. So who does he bring out? Well, he brings out Kanyon. I'm a whole better than Canyon. You guys remember Canyon. Some of us do. I mean, Canyon was a few years ago. But really, Canyon, not a big name, not a top WWE guy. I mean, he was a small, I don't want to say small part, but a mediocre part of the Alliance angle. He was wearing the shirt. He was the MVP of the Alliance back in 2001. So Canyon came out, which would have been a letdown anyway, except that they couldn't even call him Canyon. They introduced him as Chris K. Yeah, Chris K. I don't know. So yeah, to me, I mean, it's things like that that I think TNA really needs to take a step back and say, look, not everything that WWE has done or is doing is going to draw us money. Just because we get a guy who is in WWE doesn't mean that that person is going to be a draw. Doesn't mean that people are going to freak out over seeing them in the ring. And Chris Canyon was definitely an example of that. A lot of the ways they approach Rhino and Christian are examples of that. TNA really needs to get some confidence. I don't want to say confidence because I don't want to belittle what they do, but TNA really needs to have some faith in their own product, in their own fan base, and the fact that they've been around for a few years now, that they don't really need to just grab every WWE style type of angle or way to allude to WWE up north and Chris K. You know, I mean, what they have right now is pretty damn good. Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, Petey Williams, Team Canada, Monty Brown, Abyss, and Sabu had a good match. I mean, they're really, honest to God, there are so many people at TNA right now have on their roster that they focused on them and stop worrying about bringing in all these outside sources, then I think they'd be okay. The big argument has been and always will be, and I've argued against this for years, well, you get the fans in the front door with the big names, and then they stick around to see Petey Williams and AJ Styles. But as I've said before, the problem is, and always has been, if a fan tunes into the show just to see Kevin Nash, chances are they won't like Petey Williams because Kevin Nash doesn't do anything even close to what Petey Williams does. It makes no sense. It's like putting on a concert, okay, and getting Old Dirty Bastard to perform and saying, well, people will tune in to see Old Dirty Bastard, but they'll stay because we have this excellent cello player over here. No, they're not. They tuned in to see Old Dirty Bastard. They don't like cello players. By the same token, they don't like high spots and flipping around from Petey Williams if they like Kevin Nash, who can't walk correctly. So there you go, guys. Yeah, I mean, TNA put on a fairly good show. I did enjoy the program. I think that, again, their priorities are a little bit askew. But it's a good thing because TNA really doesn't have to do too much work to get back on track. They just need to refocus where they are. And they just need to move forward. And that's where you go with that. So, yeah, I mean, that's how it works. All right, guys. On that note, what I'm going to do is we're going to go to the phone lines. We're going to get Dr. Tom Pritchard on the phone. Talk to him a little bit about some things that we have going on. And then from there, we're going to move on and we're going to do the moment of insanity. So without further ado, let me dial him up. Dr. Tom Pritchard. Let's dial it.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.
All right, guys. So join me in welcoming to the show Dr. Tom Pritchard. Tom, what's up, man?
It's a pleasure to be back on, man. It's been so long since I've even had computer access or had a chance to write anything. I'm using my wife's laptop to get on the internet on occasion. But after the move and after a lot of things going down, it's just been one big hectic ride.
It sucks. It's like, I don't know, between the computers and sitting the TV up and stuff like that, it makes moving a bigger pain in the ass than it used to be.
Yeah, it's a big pain in the ass. We really didn't move that far, but we moved in one day, and in the process, I don't know how things get lost like that, but they did. So, but eventually we're getting settled down, and Christmas time is just around the corner, which I'm glad that finally gets done with, man. So.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
You have the TV up, though, right?
Oh, yeah, we got the TV up, we got everything up, and everything's good.
So you got to watch Monday Night Delight this week.
Yes, I did, and every time I watch Monday Night, I now have TiVo, which I've found out is probably the best, greatest invention ever. So I can watch it when I want, and I can fast forward and get through it, and some of the stuff I have to watch back two or three times.
Uh-huh.
In fact, the Raw before this one, the trial of Eric Bischoff and Ric Flair as Edge's guest. Oh, wait a minute. He wasn't Edge's guest. He was supposed to be Edge's guest, but he didn't show up that night. Between all that, I want to make sure I go back and I hear exactly what was said, and I want to make sure that I wasn't just hearing things. You know, my hearing is really not as good as it used to be, but when I play it back three or four times,
There would have been no segment. It would have been over, and then we would have just rolled the credits. And
yeah, you don't have TiVo on your computer there that people can go back and listen to that. I just said that. Well, wait a minute. Never mind. No. It doesn't matter if I did or not, because I think Edge said it loud enough for everybody to hear.
Yeah, I mean, you said it on our show. Edge actually said it on the USA Network, so it was...
Yeah, sure.
And you know what's funny is that this morning, as I was on the computer, I had the TV on in the background, and there was Comedy Central does... They have, like, the Daily Show, and then they have this other show, like, it called the Colbert Report, and they're actually talking about WWE and the drug testing. I mean, it's not even just a CNN thing. It's, like, all over the news as far as different outlets picking it up. And WWE, less than a month after they have to institute a drug policy, has one of their wrestlers make a joke about their road agent being a cokehead.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think it's any secret that Michael Hayes and the Freebirds were party people growing up, and most of the guys in that era were. But I also think, and I can see, personally, I can really see WWE's reasoning for doing that or the thinking behind it because the controversy and people talk about it, and I think the old adage that there's no such thing as bad press. Mm. It kind of entered into that line of thinking. It's just that, you know, the irony and the timing of it all makes people think about it that much more, and I think it opens up for everybody to criticize or at least just talk about. And whether Edge is trying to be that, no pun intended, edgy, controversial figure or not, I'm sure Michael approved the line, and Michael would say, look, man, go for it. Hit it hard. Say, go ahead and tell me, talk about Terry Gordy, and say, hey, there's not Jack Daniels or 8-Ball down there. I can hear Michael saying that, because it's no secret. We've all put ourselves out there, and we've all said what we've done, pretty much, and, you know, we've all come through it. Thankfully, or not, some of us have lived through it and are able to talk about it. So I can understand that line of thinking, and one thing Vince has never really shied away from is controversy, and he's really never shied away from being able to let people take him down a notch or try and take him down a notch. So, I mean, yeah. The reasons why they did it, I can sure see why and how it would come to justification in everybody's eyes, but it was still kind of different to hear it.
Yeah. Well, here's one thing that really got me was whatever you feel about the promo itself. I mean, Hayes came out. The irony was that he gave, I guess, a promo that was more emotional, more kind of, you know, more emotion pouring out of him than you see on these TV shows a lot these days. But even worse than that was the week after. They have this segment that's supposed to create controversy, that's supposed to be different, that has this big emotional outburst from a former, you know, legend or whatnot. They ignore it. On Raw, it wasn't even mentioned this week.
Well, yeah, but it seems to me lately, and just for the last few times that I've seen Raw, that's been the pattern. You do something one week, and the very next week, you ignore what some people think are the important things, and then you hit on these insignificant bites here and there. And of course, you know, that's your opinion, that's my opinion, that Michael did one of the most emotional and best promos out of everybody. Vince or company may think, it's not that important. And obviously they did, because they didn't mention it again. I'm surprised, well, that Vince did mention he fired Derek Bischoff this week.
Yeah.
What I was also surprised at was Shane McMahon was nowhere around when the trash got taken out. Mm-hmm. I also, the other thing that kind of hit me in passing, I guess, was when the American Dream came into the room, and he says, or should I say General Manager Dusty Rhodes? And I thought, well, was that explained earlier? Did I miss it? You know, I don't know.
I think I kind of feel like it's almost like WWE tells a story every week, and I feel like they have the story in their heads, and they kind of tell the story, but they forget that not everyone can read their minds, and that they have to kind of explain where they're coming from. They leave out big parts and big chunks as to why Shane wasn't the new GM. Because I remember I spoke to you right after Raw this week, or no, not this week, the week before, talking about the GM from the next week. And I said, oh, you know, there's rumors of this guy, that guy. And I remember you said, well, what happened to Shane? And it's something that I didn't even think about was that they basically said Shane was going to be the new GM and then decided to do something else at the last second.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, once again, I realize from being in meetings and from being there when the facts have been checked and going over pay-per-views and going over the Raws and SmackDowns leading up to the pay-per-views, Michael Hayes is one of the most detailed guys around. Michael is surprisingly to some people, not to me because I've known him for years, but he is one of the most intelligent guys on the writing team, and he really is a stickler for details, but Michael's only one guy, and I think at this time, I'm not sure, I've heard as many as 12 to 15 people are on the writing team, and God dang, man, I mean, you have to have a direction, and you have to have people all following that one direction. Otherwise, you're going to get what I think you're getting lately on Raw, and that's a different avenue and a different way everywhere you go. One thing I want to mention that real quick, just because we're all over the page already, on SmackDown, I think it was last week when was it last week when Randy turned around and saw his dad covered in blood.
Yep. That was okay. Yeah, that was one just passed.
That was last week. Well, also, did you notice when Randy and Bob were walking out to the parking lot, backstage in the building, they showed Randy and Bob didn't have glasses on, but out in the parking lot, Bob had glasses on?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know so, because I wore TiVo.
Right. Ah, TiVo.
Anyway, point is, that to me, that wasn't consistent. It didn't, and those are things that years ago I think would have been caught, or maybe it was just done so fast and so hurried that nobody really caught it, nobody really cared. Plus, I also think that doing the supernatural stuff on SmackDown is okay to a point, but now what is WWE trying to say, that everything on TV is work, everything on TV is an act?
Yeah.
And if you're saying that, then what about Edge?
Mm.
You know, there's
a blending. I know
things,
what you mean.
Man, I'm looking at and I'm kind of going, I could be entertained by it, but at the same time, don't try and tell me that this is real and then this isn't.
Well, I think it's too much to, you know what it is? It kind of reminds me of, I remember Hogan fought Warrior at WrestleMania 6, and they did that pre-WrestleMania press conference. And the two of them got in each other's faces, and they were talking, you know, Warrior was doing his whole, you know, by the power of the darkness and all that crap he used to do.
Right.
And the camera angles went to these two camera angles from the tips of Hogan and the Warrior's nose to each other. And it was the most blatantly fake worked thing I've ever seen in my life. And I remember being, I was like 12 years old, and I watched it, and I thought to myself, this is so stupid. There is no earthly way that the camera could be on the tip of their nose to be able to get this shot. And I think that the Orton thing kind of brings itself to that. I think that the fans want to suspend disbelief to a certain extent, but I think that there comes a point where it's like, you know, Jesus, well, this is just stupid. If you're trying to sell me a fight under the premise somewhat that it's supposed to be, you know, suspend your disbelief, how much disbelief can I suspend when his dad is dripping blood for no reason and it's like a bad episode of some horror movie on Sci-Fi?
Well, here's the thing. Back when Vince changed the face of the business in 85, and you had your larger-than-life cartoon characters, and he had his cartoon show, and he had his, you had guys like Hogan and Warrior who were hokey in their acting and things like that. But also, what they did was they understood what their concept was. They understood they were marketing towards kids looking up to these cartoon characters. These days, in my opinion, I think you have guys who are trying to act who are bad actors instead of letting them go out there and react and learn what the art of working used to be. Because, of course, I'm not not saying have a 1950s, 60s, or even 1970s or 80s match, but at the same time, I think we've been through the last 22 years of the cartoon character horseshit, and what's old will be new again, and if you can let these guys go out and really tell stories and let these guys stop being cookie-cutter corporate entities when they step in the ring and have to live by all these conformity and conform to everything, let them go out and be wrestlers instead of bad B-movie actors, and maybe it'll work a little better. At the same time, that's not always what WWE is about. That's not what New York is about. It's about entertainment. It's about getting the most and getting the masses to watch. And then, some people like this stuff. Some people think the Boogeyman is the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Some people think that what Orton's doing with The Undertaker is fantastic. You know what I even heard? I talked to a friend of mine last week or this week. Told me that Josh Matthews did a great job bringing The Undertaker's voice. I thought, yeah, that was great. But, you know, man, again, we're not the masses and we're not the guys that WWE is trying to get to watch. We're going to watch regardless.
I mean, the thing is, I mean, are they really looking to reach out to an audience? And if they are, what kind of audience are they reaching out to?
I think they're looking for the people who are either home on Monday nights and switching channels saying, holy shit, what is this? And getting them interested by not only with the divas, but having guys like Randy Orton or Edge or you have your old-time fans looking to say, is that Ric Flair? Or that's what I think they're doing, is people who might catch a glimpse of it and say, hey, this is pretty entertaining. Where those people are, I don't know. I mean, I'm wondering today if I was growing up in this environment as a 10-year-old kid, would I be playing video games or would I be watching wrestling? I don't know if that would, watching the show would entice me, or if I was 10 years old, if I would be enticed by watching the show week after week. Maybe I would. I mean, right now I watch it just because I know a lot of the guys, and I want to see what they're doing.
Yeah. No, I mean, I know what you're saying. I think that one of the things that gets me, and that I think that wrestling promoters and WWE tends to ignore too, is that, I mean, I started watching wrestling, I think my dad made me watch when I was a kid. He was watching and he said, I watch this. And I've gotten my friends into it. There's a lot of people who watch wrestling that I know that got into it because I would say, oh, well, you got to watch this tape. You have to see this match. WWE, I feel like, has always had to rely, especially in the late 90s, on word of mouth. You know, a fan tells his friend to watch, a fan gives his friend a tape. I think the product that they're putting on now, I don't know who would recommend a specific tape of anything they're doing lately to a friend of theirs. And I mean, how do you feel about that, as far as losing fans in that respect by putting on products that, you know, and they say the hardcore fans are already watching, but if you keep them happy, they're going to recommend the product. And if you don't keep them happy, they're not, and you're going to lose a lot of people like that.
Well, here's the deal. Everything is going to change. The entertainment business is constantly changing. Hell, the cable business, DirecTV, internet sites. Everything is in a constant flux of change. And I think that Vince and the writers are looking for that next big wave. They're looking to see who's going to get on the next big wave. As far as people recommending watching the show, if somebody came along again, if your next Rock or your next Mick Foley came along that could be entertaining in a way where people just are fascinated when they go out and do a promo, or fascinated when they come out and capture the imagination, I don't. In fact, I know that there has been nobody to capture the imagination of wrestling fans and casual fans alike, like Steve Austin, The Rock. The Undertaker has captured, I think, the imagination of fans throughout the years, but I think right now the things they're doing with The Undertaker and Orton is borderline, you know, come on, give me a break.
Yeah, totally.
Type stuff. But
I know what you're saying, but what I'm wondering is, in the environment they have right now, with the politics and all the bullshit, and then bringing a story up one week, ignoring a character the next week, do you think it's possible for anybody to be able to step up and be that person in the environment that they have laid out right now?
Yeah, but you see, it has to be like a bowling ball, throwing in all those pins and knocking all those pins down, wiping it away, getting new bowling pins in there. In other words, you know, if you have the same people who were running an unsuccessful company before, why in the living hell would you want to run your company now? But hey, listen, man, it's their company. And I'm not saying anything about WCW or the people that are running that. I'm not going to say a word about that. But what I will say is that if you have the environment of paranoia, and yes, you do have to keep the boys in line, and by God, yes, you do have to have rules, and by God, you don't want them running wild every night, but you know, you do need some kind of trust there, and you do need some kind of confidence by your employees to be able to have that open line of communication. Quite honestly, quite frankly, I don't feel that line of communication is open right now. I think that most of the boys, in fact, 99.9% of them are probably don't have the confidence to go to a higher up, unless it's Vince. And you got to go through a lot of doors to get to Vince right now. They don't have the confidence to go in and discuss something with faith and trust. You know, can it be done like that? Yeah, man, I think you have to wipe the slate clean. You have to get people in there who understand what it takes, because working in Japan is a whole lot different than working over here in the States. It's a whole different culture. It's a whole different way of doing things. It worked over there. Try it over here and see what happens.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, that's why, again, Bob Sapp, I hear about Bob Sapp all the time. I used to hear about Bob Sapp all the time. But I would venture a guess that as over as Bob Sapp was in Japan, he wouldn't be near as over here. Whether it was for WCW, or WCW's out of business, I mentioned that,
yeah.
Or was it WWE or TNA?
Well, no, I mean, it makes sense. This is the same company that put the wig on Goldberg within 2 weeks.
Well, you know what, though? That's very true.
Mm-hmm.
You are correct. And there's always something to look at and say, why? Why? But, you know, whether it's putting the wig on Goldberg or having Jericho as world champion clean up dog shit, there's always things you can point to and say, why? What's the reason behind that? And then whatever it is, you know, if you can find the real reason, then you'll be the winner.
The alpha master. Let me ask you this, because on Wednesday, Batista did an interview as the world champion of SmackDown. Did another one of his famous diarrhea of the mouth kind of interviews where he talked about carrying SmackDown and how when he was called over to SmackDown, he knew he would be carrying the show and footing the load on his shoulders or something like that. How do you feel about that? I mean, you obviously, you train with the guy, right?
Yeah.
In OVW. What do you think it is? I mean, here he is, he's the world champion, and he's making comments that kind of breed that paranoia and resentment. What do you make of that? Do you think that's all done on his own? Do you think that management has anything to do with some of the comments that he makes, or no?
Well, here's the thing, too. And I've read things where Dave Batista says he didn't learn anything in OVW. Well, you know, thing is, in order to learn in OVW, you have to attend class in OVW. You can't be homesick with a cold and have your wife call for you and ask to be excused from class. You have to actually make an effort. You have to show up and you have to learn, because there's plenty of other guys who came from OVW that were doing great and really did succeed. Of course, there were other guys who, because of Jim Cornette's manners and the way he conducted things, didn't like it very well. But you know what? They still learned because they attended class and they came and they showed up and they really had that drive and passion. I think Dave Batista has that drive and passion, but I also think he's lost sight of how he got there. And he also doesn't you have to have confidence when you're the champion and be in that spot, no doubt. But you also have to have some humility and understand how you really got there. Dave Bautista is a great attraction, or is a good attraction, let me say that. People want to see him. In OVW, he was Leviathan. He was the most over he has ever been. But once again, when you get to WWE and they make you a deacon, ooh, he wasn't real happy then. All of a sudden, there were some people who liked him and wanted to see him get where he is today. You don't do it on your own. And you don't go over and alienate the people you're going to work with by saying it's all you. Because there's other people in the ring with you who help you make you be you. And Bautista on his own, he ain't there yet. He may make it one day. He may be one of the greatest workers ever to come down the pike. I don't know. Here's a guy who tore his tricep jogging when he was rehabbing. Now, come on. Sure, he's a tough guy. He's got the look. But I think he needs to learn some humility down the road. Otherwise, he's going to be out in the cold.
See, what is it about? I mean, that's one thing about the business that always got me. We always talk about how promotions don't learn from history. You know, WCW went out of business, and now WWE is doing what they did, that kind of stuff. But even performers don't seem to learn from history. I mean, for every Bautista, you had a China, you had, you know, Buff Bagwell, you had all these people who were on top of the world or doing well at some point, talking, and then when the promoters got tired of them and they fell out of their little circle of friends, they ended up, you know, jobless without a defender in the world.
Well, here's the thing, and the only reason I can talk about this and say this, because I've never been in that position, but I did ride with Steve Austin. I've been up and down the roads with Steve. I've lived in the same dumps he's lived in. I did train The Rock. I know The Rock. The Rock's had more success 10 times, 20 times over Dave Bautista ever will have, and he still has humility, and he still has pride, but he's humble, and he realized he didn't do it on his own. So I think it really comes down to the person that, when they get to that spot, figuring that this is the time they're needed, and this is they're the savior of whatever show they're going on, and they lose sight, or if they never even had an insight, they think that they're the saviors, and they're doing their part, and they should be that everyone should be thankful they came along to save the business. And you know what? I've never had a cross word with Dave Bautista, but I have talked to him, and I believe his attitude is that the people he thinks are on his side, he has no clue.
No.
He has no clue. I'm not talking about Triple H, because I can see Triple H liking Dave because of his work ethic and because of how he looks. But at the same time, Bautista feels that some of these people who really push for him were on his side the whole time, when in reality, they weren't and they aren't. I won't mention names on that either, but I will say Bautista is swimming with sharks and he has no clue.
Yeah,
he may think he knows, but in reality, he ain't got a clue.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I think that, I mean, even with Hunter, I mean, Hunter's on Raw, Bautista's on SmackDowns. If anything, I really don't think he gives a, you know, too much of a damn right now, as long as he's not on his brand. But, I mean, right now, especially with the amount, we talked before about the amount of people on the writing team and the amount of people that are actually having creative input into the company, it's impossible to think that you have a good spot now, because it wouldn't take much to sway the group. It's not like you're dealing with one guy. You're dealing with it with a group of people with your fate in their hands.
Well, yeah, but one thing I do think Bautista has learned how to please the ones he needs to please. But I also think that he feels there is nobody else in his league. What he has to look at down the road is there's always somebody younger, and there's always somebody waiting to take your spot. And with his torn lat, I know he's made the choice to go ahead and keep working through it and rehab, and they're protecting him. That's fine. But, you know, I think if he was that secure, he would take the time off.
Yeah.
two, developmental systems in place. You never know when they might just get a look at a guy and say, man, you got the look we want, we'll bring you up and we'll put you in that spot, ready or not. Batista can be out just like that. He can be here today and gone later today. But he didn't get that. That's fine, because he's been promised and secured all these things.
Well, I mean, the fact that he's not leaving, the fact that he's not taking the amount of time off, do you think that either that is what's leading him to make comments like this, feeling that WWE needs him, and that's not why they're letting him, that's not why he's taking time off? He actually feels like he's irreplaceable, and that's why he has to be there? Or do you think that he's kind of saying these comments to keep up his own stock and make it seem like he's a lot more needed than he is, and in reality he's just worried about losing his spot if he were to leave?
You know, it could be a little of both. It really could, because at the same time, I have heard people talk about how insecure Batista really is and can be, and how basically Dave is a pretty shy, easygoing guy, but when you get in that spot, you have to be confident and you have to be a star. You have to be on, and maybe that's his way of being on. Maybe that's his way of just combating the insecurity and overcompensating for it by being cocky and sure of himself. Maybe it is. I mean, I haven't talked to Batista in since WrestleMania 20, and that's the last conversation we had. I looked at him and he started out by telling me how sure he was that he made this decision, and in the end, you could see the uncertainty in his face, or he was just bored with what I was saying. So, I mean, you know, he's in a tough spot, because he really does have to carry the ball. I don't know what SmackDown rating is doing now. I don't know what SmackDown house shows are doing now. But, I mean, are they doing that great?
No.
Okay. So he's carrying the ball to not such great ratings. That's the facts. And that's a lot to have on your head. That's a lot to carry around with you, because when you are the champion, it is true that you're the guy they look to. You're the top man. You're the one they expect results from. Again, I go back to the two guys that I remember the most results from is Austin and The Rock. And you don't have two of those guys today. You don't have one of those guys today.
Well, let me ask you this. What happens if SmackDown goes off the air and they recombine the brands? How would Batista, just from your observation, survive in an environment where his competition, where he has to actually compete with guys like Triple H, John Cena, I don't know, Triple H and John Cena, or whoever else they happen to have, when he has to compete with everybody for a top spot? How do you think he would excel? Do you think he would be...
Well, here's the thing. Years ago, Pat Rose asked Bill Dundee, when he's booking Memphis, what do you have to do to get a break? And Dundee said, first of all, you have to have somebody like you. I think Dave Batista is liked by the right people right now. But if he keeps on the road he's going and gets an injury every 6 months or every year, his body physically won't be able to hold up. I think the people who like him will do all they can for him in the meantime. But if SmackDown goes under, which I don't believe SmackDown will actually go off the air, I don't believe it'll get canceled, I don't know, but if it goes off the air, he would have been one of the stars. He looks like a star. He looks like somebody.
Yeah.
There will be a place for him, because the people in charge like him, and they like his attitude. Dave can be a very charming guy. He can be a real engaging person. But when it comes to business, it comes to reality of things, at times he loses sight of it. So, I mean, I have a different relationship with him than those guys do, because I've seen him from when he first came to Stanford to start training from office, and he had the bald head with a Mongolian
shaved head,
tail in the back, you know, and up until he got sent to OVW, all the way through OVW. Mm. See, nobody, he forgets.
mean, the other thing about him, too, is that, I mean, you know from working there that a lot of people in the back always look for little things to pick up about certain people that they have something against. I mean, you had, you know, he's wearing sweatpants and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Batista, I mean, it's already been said a lot of times. I mean, it sneaks out every once in a while. You hear people talk about his age. I mean, he got started at kind of a late age. Now I think he's like 38 years old right now. How much longer do you think WWE is going to continue to push him before people who start to have those doubts about his age and him getting on in years are going to start getting their way and they're going to start trying to push him a little further down?
You know what? It might already be happening, but at the same time, you still have Shawn Michaels who can perform. That's not good.
Yeah.
Actually, come to think of it. But it I think it's probably already started in a subtle way, especially with the injuries. I don't know who would be doing it and who they would be saying it around, because Dave is well liked, and that's fine. You know, I like Dave. Personally, I like him. Professionally, I think he has a lot of growing up to do, even at 38 years old. I think that the more he gets injured and the more he doesn't produce with opponents who aren't able to carry him, I think the more the conversation is going to come up that, hey, let's take a look. He's been wrestling now how many years? I don't know. But point is, after you've been in the business so long and then you're up in age, unless you're Ric Flair, obviously your shelf life is going to be a lot
Well, that was the segue, because actually he was who I was going to ask you about next. Was talk a little bit about the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, who's been it's been a big news story the last couple of weeks. What's your take on the whole situation about Rick?
Oh, man, you know what? Here boy, I think any of us who've been in a mess can relate to Ric Flair's. Rick is one of those guys that you don't want to see. You don't want to see him in a bad way. You don't want to see him hurt. You don't want to see him going through a lot of pain and suffering, so to speak. But I think with everything going on in his personal life, and then getting mixed up with it in road rage, things like that, I think a lot of it has to come with the pressure Rick puts on himself. And again, anybody who's had IRS problems knows those son of a bitches need to be shot and disbanded. That, I think everything coming to a head has really made Flair snap. I mean, he snapped the last couple of years. He snapped with Bischoff. He snapped with other things. Now I think it's just one of those things that he knows his wrestling career is not what it used to be. He's still having a good time, but he's got all these things on him and all this pressure. Who knows how much longer he can go?
Yeah.
Himself included. I think he's doubting. He might be asking himself that question. You know, at 56 years old, to get out of bed every morning, I haven't taken anywhere near the bumps he's taken. I haven't been in a plane crash. And I feel it every day. And I can just imagine how Rick feels when he gets out of bed. I think that what they did on Raw and again with Edge last 2 weeks ago and then this past week, it's fair game, because he's a public figure and he's everybody knows about his problems. It's been in the press. So take advantage of it, and you know that's really the way the business is looked at, and I think Rick kind of looks at it like that too. But I personally wouldn't want to be Ric Flair right now.
Let me ask you this, man. Fast forward 5 years from now, where's Ric Flair? Is he looking back on some of the foolish decisions he's made, or do you think he's totally over the edge into that kind of mad doctor type of persona?
I you know what I think? I think Rick's going to be one of those guys that's with WWE as either an agent or one of the guys that's going to be around because of who he is and because he's good to have around and fun to be around. guys who know how the old school was. Rick, I mean, Freddie Blassie used to be that guy with Vince, who was that link from the old school, who understood what it was like, and who was fun to be around, who could tell stories, who could get the morale up, and tell somebody how to be a star. And that's what Ric Flair is. He can mentor these young guys and tell them how they need to be, how they need to act to be a star. Mm-hmm. And I believe he'll be around for, you know, that reason. And I think because, again, he's another guy that's well thought of there.
Yeah. All right, Tom, man. I mean, it's been great having you on. Before I let you go, anything you want to plug that you have coming up, man?
You know, there's a couple things. I'm doing a camp. Oh man, it's January in Seattle, and this past Sunday, I went to Jimmy Valiant's Boogie School of Professional Wrestling in Charlottesville, Virginia, and while I will say OVW is one of the greatest of all time schools to learn everything all the way around, Jimmy Valiant's school has pictures, he has a Hall of Fame, he has something for everybody, especially if you're a wrestling fan, if you're somebody who really wants to get in the business. Let me just go ahead and plug that and tell you, in Jimmy Valiant's the Boogie Woogie Man School of Professional Wrestling in Charlottesville, Virginia, is really well a shot. Just take a look at her, even for the young guys coming up wanting to wrestle.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Tom, have a good holiday for you, man, and a good new year if we don't talk to you.
Very good.
And we'll have you on the site real soon with a new column coming the next few weeks.
Fantastic.
All right, bud.
Thanks, man.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.
So there you have it, guys. Dr. Tom Pritchard, WorldWrestlingInsanity.com columnist, checking in with some thoughts on different things going on in the wrestling community. Now, on that note, we're going to bring you right to the moment of insanity, which isn't going to be that prolonged this week because we actually already covered it. But you know what? Let's introduce it. Let's get it on the line. This week's moment of insanity.
All right, JR. Time for your colon surgery, and everyone on that, I'm Dr. Heine. I want you to meet Nurse Robert Knockers.
Yeah, it wasn't much fun.
Beer is only a four-letter word.
The world's largest love machine, Viscera.
Woo! As voted by you, the readers of WorldWrestlingInsanity.com, it's this week's Moment of Insanity.
Hey, what happened?
Ernie, don't worry, man. Don't worry. Take it easy, Daddy. You don't know what's going on in my head, man. You don't know what I'm seeing. You do not know what he's got me, man. He's messing with mine.
All right. I'll be stoned for Christmas. Count on me. Please have Stroh's and Michelob's and a place for me to be.
Yeah, guys, obviously, as you just heard, this week's moment of insanity, as Tom and I discussed before, is Randy Orton watching Daddy dripping his blood from his head. Randy Orton going through hallucinations when feuding with The Undertaker. When I say hallucinations, as we talked about earlier, I'll give you guys some quick background. Randy Orton feuding with The Undertaker, the two of them have a feud that goes back to WrestleMania. I mean, they fought at WrestleMania, and now they're trying to redo this feud. So WWE decides that since they are a TV program, much like Lost or some of these other dramatic programs, what they're going to do is they're going to have kind of like a segment where Randy looks at his dad, and his dad is dripping in blood. And he looks away, and when he looks back again, his dad doesn't have blood on his head, and it's all just, you know, a mind game. Now look, The Undertaker's been stupid for a while. We know that. The Undertaker's whole gimmick is based on things like throwing lightning. When he fought Yokozuna, actually following the match, he became a graphic on the Titantron and flew away. Now, that's not bullshit, guys. Go get that tape. It was one of the Royal Rumbles. He actually flew away. So, yeah, The Undertaker's been kind of hokey for a bit. Now, here's the thing, though, about WWE that really gets me is they sit there and they try to do things like that you would see on a TV show like Lost. This is what people were comparing it to. They were comparing it to the episode of Lost where Locke, the guy, you guys might know him as the stepfather from the horror movies, was out in the jungle with Boone, and Boone looked at him, looked away, came back, and he had blood on his head, that whole kind of thing. Here's the problem with SmackDown. SmackDown is not meant to be a dramatic television program. It's not a narrative. It's not the kind of program where they put scenes together, they edit them together to tell a story. That's not SmackDown. That's Lost. SmackDown is a docudrama, in many senses of the word. I mean, it's not dramatic anymore. It's kind of comedic. But it's supposed to be presented as a docudrama, meaning that it is a dramatic representation of something that's trying to portray itself almost as a documentary. It's a storyline that's supposed to be built on the premise that what you're seeing is almost a documentary. It's almost a, you know, an unfiltered, here are the cameras, here are the people doing their things to each other. The feuds are based on the wrestlers' feelings for one another, not based on the promotion's desire to tell a story. It's supposed to be the kind of thing where you suspend your disbelief in the sense that, not that you're convincing yourself that it's real, that you're trying to convince yourself that what you're watching is actually people videotaping wrestlers going about their workday, okay, and trying to, you know, mess with each other's minds, which, again, is fine. I mean, and hokey things can happen. Wrestlers can come out in garbage trucks. I'm going to throw you in the garbage. You know, like, where the hell did you get a garbage truck? Give me a break. Where did Kurt Angle get a milk truck? You know, stupid things like that happen, and that's fine. That's actually part of it. That's not a logic hole. WWE's hole that they hit this week was with Randy Orton and Bob Orton, and that whole thing, especially with the blood, because I think one of the things with WWE that they fail to realize, whenever you have a segment that goes on TV where people can visualize what's happening off camera as far as people getting Bob Orton prepped with the blood on his head, people editing the film together, then you've hit a snag. That's what suspension of disbelief in wrestling in 2005 is. It's not being able to visualize what's going on off camera. And WWE did that with the Bob Orton situation, as I talked before with Tom Pritchard. It's the same thing with the Ultimate Warrior and Hogan when that happened. I didn't enjoy that either. I think in wrestling, WWE needs to realize that with announcers and with the setting of a sports competition, I mean, that's all it really is. It's a docudrama with the background of a sporting competition. So while you can have hokey, over-the-top things, you can't have things that are just completely unbelievable and completely unrealistic. And that's what this Bob Orton, Randy Orton thing was. It's not the kind of situation where, I mean, that's part of the program. It would be as if roller derby did it. Do you know what I mean? So it's not like that. I mean, you can't, you know, I mean, wrestling is supposed to be a matter of using the people that you have on screen to do different things and to kind of feud with one another in a way that's somewhat believable. And you can almost liken it to magic. It's as if there was a magic show on TV, and all of a sudden you caught this blatant video edit. It's like, well, that's not really magic. Well, by the same token, it's not really wrestling. You can't have a segment that really couldn't air unless it was edited. I mean, look, we like to talk about progression, we like to talk about, you know, technology today and all this other stuff and video editing and professional wrestling, the way it's supposed to be presented, is supposed to be presented in a way that makes your audience forget that they're watching something fake. Even if it's hokey, it's supposed to be to a certain extent of getting your emotions moving, but if you get the feeling and you watch a segment that reminds you that everybody on TV is in on the act, fucks up the whole thing. And that's what WWE did. They fucked up the whole thing. And so I didn't enjoy the segment. I thought it was silly. I thought it was hokey. And I thought it was really unneeded, especially for a feud like this. Randy Orton and Undertaker have enough history. They have enough character development, I guess, at this point, that they don't really need a segment as god-awful as that was. Here's what we got, guys. Personal Jesus checked in. He said, my vote for Moment of Insanity this week comes from SmackDown, where The Undertaker played mind games with Randy Orton, including appearing behind him in a mirror, making it appear like Bob Orton was covered in blood, and making Josh Matthews talk in his voice. Forget that it's corny, forget that it's stuff out of a B-grade horror movie, that's bad enough, but if this is a hallucination, if this is all The Undertaker screaming at Randy's head, why the hell can everyone else see it? Exactly, PJ. The caskets, the lighting, the works, it's corny, but it works because everyone else is supposed to see it. But if The Undertaker is doing all this to fuck with Randy's head, it should be just in Randy's head. Good point. I mean, you can only push reality so far. And unless WWE is going to explain that Orton is part of the fucking Psychic Friends network and is broadcasting what he sees to everyone watching SmackDown, the only person who should see this stuff is Randy. And you know what? Personal Jesus makes an awesome point. This segment would have been so much more, not just a segment, but the whole show, would have been so much more appealing had WWE not showed us what Randy Orton was seeing. and just showed Randy Orton flipping out. Just Randy Orton going crazy. Undertaker's finally getting into his head. Randy Orton needs a psychotic edge. At this point, Randy Orton is managed by his dad. Kind of comes off like a sissy Mary Lala. So if Randy Orton wants to be a tough guy, maybe he should go a little crazy. Let him go a little crazy and see what he could do with it. But no, we all got to watch it together. David says, I agree. All Randy Orton has to do is find out who the underbiker knows in the production truck and take that guy out. No more lightning, no more mirror tricks, no more bloody daddy. Bam! Damn straight. Totally. I mean, Nose Nugget says, yeah, that was my nominee from last week. Yo, Randy, Mark Calloway's in the production truck. Then again, Steph's slaves or writers are really dumb. So yeah, I mean, that segment as a whole was stupid, and that is this week's Moment of Insanity. Remember, guys, voting starts now for next week's Moment of Insanity, and if you're listening, listen close. We are taking votes for 2005's Top 5 Moments of Insanity. It's going to be done on the year-end audio edition of this show. You guys have another week to send it in. About, I would say, the deadline, December the 23rd. And if you guys can get in your top 5 moments of insanity by December 23rd, we're going to include that on the year-end audio. You could do it one of two ways. You could either go to our message boards, log in to my forum, and vote away on the top 5 moments of insanity, or you could drop me an email, or drop our website an email at insanity@worldwrestlinginsanity.com. Give me your top 5 moments of insanity for the year. Maybe a brief rant if you'd like. And we'll count them down. And we'll go through some of the craziest stuff that happened in 2005. But there you have it, guys. And also, start voting now for next week. So we have one more week left. So vote. And next week, who knows? Maybe your crazy moment will be this week's Moment of Insanity. That's going to do it for me, guys. I am out of here. Good show today. Really good to have Dr. Tom on. Hopefully, we'll have somebody on next week. We're going to start winding down the year a little bit. But I have a bunch of guests lined up for January that's going to shock a lot of people. So it should be pretty cool. We'll have fun with that. A lot coming up. Be sure to check out the website. Check out all the new features we have coming each and every day right here on WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. So until we next speak, this is James Gutman saying thank you so much for listening. Be well, and thanks for sharing my insanity.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.